this abandoned airfield in southern Iran, where President Jimmy Carter, weeping on the television, having to explain the failure of one of the most sophisticated military powers on earth in order to slay the messenger. Imam Khomeini was in his night vigil with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And it was in the morning when he said that America can't do a damn thing.
Cannot do a damn thing.
Because when that mission was aborted, as you said, they wanted to look for that relief in the 20th century, and they didn't get it. Give us some context.
This is the promise of God. And you mentioned something very nice. Let me take upon this.
Sure.
Okay, back then, you know, historically, they tried to destroy the Kaaba.
Yeah.
The house of Allah,
which
was the
right.
symbol. The
that's
building right. itself, the physical building.
The building, yeah.
Okay, God at that time, look at the miracle, a different one, and a different level.
At a different level, yeah.
At least in my opinion, because I like to think about things.
Sure.
Back then, God sent them some kind of birds. Brother Ajaz, birds have wings, but the sand, it does not have wings.
No.
But it does the same.
Yes.
So, this is the miracle, this is a promise.
I mean, that's...
For those who wants to see it.
Yeah. I mean, for our listeners who perhaps are not aware of this event and how big an impact that really made on all of us at that time. I mean, I remember the newsreels when...
I remember Jimmy Carter almost cried. Or he did cry.
Well, I mean, before that, before he actually had to...
That was the breaking news back
then. The breaking news. Before he had to address the nation, we got a whiff of what had happened in Tabas. And it came through through some of the reports that last minute... when one of the big personal carriers, that helicopters that had landed in at that night, was about to land that night, had a clear vision that the weather was fine. The weather was absolutely perfect for the landing of that particular helicopter.
As far as the technology concerned.
Yeah, they got a weather report. They were getting, you know,
satellite... All different kind of calculation except for what God
does.
Does.
And that's the thing.
And that's the miracle.
Yeah. And the point is that that particular storm happens when that assassination squad was about to land. I mean, that's the thing. When you go into the details of it, there was 150 men who were trained by the CIA to do this particular job of slaying the messenger. They were on that personal helicopter.
And the messenger this time was Imam Khomeini.
Yeah, and he was in his night vigil, in his prayer. He was in his prayer. And at that particular moment when they were landing, they were told by the carrier from which they were coming from that the weather report in the last 30 seconds is absolutely perfect for landing. And they get suddenly, out of nowhere, a sandstorm.
Even some elements inside... perhaps could work with them.
Yeah.
According to them.
Yeah. But the sandstorm came out of nowhere, clogged up the engine. The pilot was blind.
The high-tech engine,
yeah. And the equipment went berserk, and he just ended up landing on top of the other aircraft that had landed on the field earlier and crashed right into that and burst into flames. And, you know, they were all burnt to death. That was it, all over.
Brother, that the was, reason...
You know, you said about the stones in Surah Field.
The reason I said that, let me explain but myself. I'm not trying to make a story.
But I'm just saying to...
I'm not trying to make, you know, this long speech of nothing.
Yeah.
The reason I'm saying this is because when God intends to do something, it doesn't matter in what shape, how, where.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If the job should be done by a bird...
Then
which happens to be an alive
living creature,
he would do it.
Do it.
But it doesn't need a bird to destroy the enemy of himself. This is my point. And I refer to another chapter, chapter Fath, the victory.
Yes.
In one verse, it says, وَلِلَّهِ جُنُودُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. It belongs to him. Everything as... a soldier.
Yeah.
What is a soldier's task? What soldiers does? You're
kill.
Telling me.
To kill.
To defend.
To defend and kill
to
his
defend enemy.
To defend
and if it's necessary to kill. For the commander of, the higher authority.
Authority.
In this case, in every case, the higher authority is Allah.
Yes. وَلِلَّهِ جُنُودُ السَّمَاوَاتِ
وَالْأَرْضِ. It belongs to him. You have to remember the Arabic word of it. Walillah, it belongs to him. It's from him. It's for him. Junud al-samawati wal-ard, all the entire military soldiers of the heavens and the earth. This is my point. This is a miracle for someone who believes. And believing, brother, is a very, very sensitive issue. Yes. Let me give you another example.
Please.
Brother, one of the nature of the water is what? It's wet.
Yes.
Do you know why it's wet? Because God wants it to be wet. And this is the belief. He created it. The fire, one of the aspects of the fire is what?
Heat.
To burn.
Burn. To heat.
But why the fire doesn't burn Abraham, peace be upon him? Why? It doesn't work. This is the kind of belief that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Imam believed this.
Yes.
And acted upon it.
Yes.
And he didn't care what century it was, what kind of enemy he was facing, domestically and internationally.
Yeah.
And he succeeded. And the chapter of Ahzab, the ayah in chapter Ahzab, it says, "Min al mu'minin rijalun sadaqu." It's a covenant. It's a promise. It's not just one-sided aspect of it.
Yeah.
God promises you something. You promise something to God, but you have to come clean out of it. Imam Khomeini did that.
Yeah.
He fulfilled the pledge that he had with his Creator.
And what I wanted to say, you know, which you quite nicely and eloquently put it in terms of the miracle of the elephant, is that, as you say, everything belongs to Allah, as you quoted from the Quran. But at the end of the day, it shows the insignificance of the opposition.
And at the end of the day, you know, it shows us something else. Who's the fool?
Who's the real fool? Exactly.
Who's the real fool?
Fool.
Who wants to try the tried one again? And again and again.
Exactly.
To see it for himself. You've seen it before.
Yeah.
You're going to see it again.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to change.
Let me put it this way. How many bodyguards did Imam Khomeini have that day when these helicopters were landing in Tabaz?
Not so many. Let me tell you a story. I'm trying to make it short. This kid, talking to his father, you know, complaining about, hey, this is wrong, that's wrong, you know, it's tough, it's getting tougher by the day, and I don't know what to do, you know, he was so miserable, you know, complaining,
right,
nagging, complaining,
right.
And his daddy, you know, this is one of the daddy's job, to calm, you know, to listen, and at the end, give the good advice. He said, son, you said everything, and I might agree with you, but you didn't mention something which is important, and that is called God. you said all different things about different subject matter. I agree with you, but in the equation, where is God's place? This is where the enemy of Islam go wrong.
And this is where Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, was right. Because that's what he was trying to get across to what they call the opium of the masses, that God is there.
And that was a miracle.
God exists. He was doing his night vigil. He was talking to his greatest bodyguard while these helicopters were crashing in the desert of Tabas by a small
handful of
sand.
He didn't miss his night prayer at that time.
No, I mean, this was a point we pointed out in the previous programs, that he never missed one rakat, one unit of prayer his entire life. I wish we could live up to such standards. I myself feel ashamed when I speak about such things. But there we are. But in the next session, I hope that maybe you'll touch on another very important aspect which we couldn't cover in this program, and that is this legacy that the great Imam re-emphasized from the Holy Prophet about the Quran and Itrati. And I'm mentioning this because there are other schools of thought out there as far as the Islamic world is concerned or the Muslim world is concerned. Why did Imam Khomeini place so much emphasis on this tradition of Taqlid? Dr. Hasni, thanks very much for being on the program today. I really appreciate the discussion we had.
Thank you.
It was very, very inspiring. And it leaves me just to say to our audience, Wa assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessing of Allah be upon you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Returns to our camp riderless.
Azor Sayyidi wa Mawlai wa Mu'tamadi wa Rajai.
The ocean of dua.
Al Imam Al Hussein.
For ourselves, Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
فَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ أُمَّتَانِ أَسَّسَتْ أَسَاسَ الظُّلْمِ وَالْجَارِ عَلَيْكُمْ أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ أُمَّتَانِ دَفَعَتْكُمْ عَنْ مَقَامِكُمْ وأزالتكم عن مراتبكم التي رتبكم الله فيها.
Brothers and sisters, we were talking about curse and whether it is in harmony with one's merciful demeanor or not. I mean, we concluded that in reality, when we take the spirit of actions into account, when we call on the Almighty Allah to distance those oppressors from His mercy, فَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ أُمَّةً أَسَّسَتْ أَسَاسَ الظُّلْمِ وَالْجَوْرِ عَلَيْكُمْ أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ. We are asking goodness and mercy, because by doing such, the people who laid that foundation may come to their senses, or at the very end, they will be removed from the surface of the earth, and they will not have more evil actions on the surface of the earth. Now, a very important point to remember is that we are aware that Allah curses a group of people in the Quran due to some characteristics, and the reality of His curse is to deprive them from His mercy. Those who possess a divine spirit assimilate Allah's demeanor and seek the same for these people. In simple words, it is as if they declare their harmony and pleasure with what Allah is pleased with. In one of the verses that we discussed earlier in the previous program regarding the permissibility of expressing la'n, the Holy Quran says, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يَكْتُمُونَ مَا أَنزَلْنَا مِنَ الْبَيِّنَاتِ وَالْهُدَى مِنْ بَعْدِ مَا بَيَّنَاهُ لِلنَّاسِ فِي الْكِتَابِ أُولَٰئِكَ يَلْعَنُهُمُ اللَّهُ وَيَلْعَنُهُمُ اللَّاعِنُونَ. Indeed, those who conceal what we have sent down of manifest proofs and guidance, after we have clarified it in the Book of Mankind, they shall be cursed by Allah and cursed by the cursers. We can see here that not only Allah curses those who hide manifest proofs, but even those who are in harmony with the Divine Spirit, they are also known as la'ineen, as the verse suggests. They are cursed by Allah and cursed by the cursers.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies, it clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is, do not allow tyranny. Do not allow evil doing. Do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah. He appreciates Him. He understands His dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
It must be remembered that the principal cursor, as indicated in the verse, is Allah. So, He expels a group of people from His mercy because they have brought with themselves evil actions, because they have done what they deserve to be expelled for. And consequently, they encounter nothing but the recompense of their deeds. We, on the other hand, who are encouraged to curse them, actually harmonize ourselves with the divine spirit. In fact, we strengthen our innate and natural aversion for the proponents of disbelief, deviation, and oppression. Another important point to consider is that it must be understood that curse or expulsion from the divine mercy does not stop in this world. There are many verses that inform us that a group of people are cursed in this world as well as the hereafter. They have planted the seeds of continual expulsion and harm for themselves, and while Almighty Allah curses them, if His virtuous servants who are dissolved in Him adopt His demeanor, they are also displaying complete submission to him, and they are cursing them as well. So, cursing those who continuously oppressed the guardians of Islam, such that they left this world in this state of disbelief, is therefore sheer manifestation of divine volition. The Holy Quran says, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا وَمَاتُوا وَهُمْ كُفَّارٌ أُولَٰئِكَ عَلَيْهِمْ لَعْنَةُ اللَّهِ وَالْمَلَائِكَةِ وَالنَّاسِ أَجْمَعِينَ. Indeed, those who turn faithless die while they're faithless, it is they on whom shall be the curse of Allah, the angels, and all mankind. This means that not just the Allah is cursing them, but the angels and mankind should also do so. And the angels and all mankind, by cursing them, are harmonizing themselves with the divine spirit, and as a result, getting closer to the Almighty Allah. We will, inshallah, talk about this more in the next programs. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
The light.
Archaeologists have discovered the largest ever bronze mask in an archaeological site in China's southwest Sichuan province.
This is a large bronze mask we unearthed from the central park of the number 3 ritual pit. The widest part from one tip of ear to the other is 136 centimeters and the height is around 75 centimeters. It can be regarded as the largest bronze mask on earth in Sanjingdui and even the largest in the Shang and the Shu dynasties.
The mask was found together with other cultural objects such as ivory and bronzeware. These items needed to be removed first before handling the mask, which made the extraction process complicated. Restoration work is underway on the largest bronze mask taken from the site. The relic is believed to be thousands of years old, dating back to the Shu period. The site is an archaeological treasure mine belonging to the Bronze Age of over 4,000 years ago. The area was first discovered in China in the late 1920s. An Australian zoo has welcomed two baby bilbies, an endangered species. Their birth has brought joy and hope to zookeepers and wildlife enthusiasts. The baby bilbies were born in Taronga Zoo in Western Sydney. Zookeepers named the two male joeys, Molly and Cliff, after a national park that once was home to herds of this animal. The birth of the joeys has raised hope among the zookeepers of reintroducing the species to the wild. Bilbies were once found across 70% of Australia's landmass. They are believed to have inhabited Australia for up to 15 million years.
Chameleons changing color is one of the most fascinating traits amongst living creatures. Now, Can't humans make a robot with the same capability? In a science lab in Seoul, a team of engineers have created a robot that mimics the color-changing ability of the famous lizard. The researchers have made the skin with a special ink that changes color based on temperature and is controlled by tiny flexible heaters. The head engineer says creating a wearable device that can actively change color and patterns was the main goal of the study.
The pattern of South Korea's military uniform is made for woodland and certain colors. So if you wear this military uniform and go to the desert, you can be easily exposed. Actively changing colors and patterns to match different surroundings is the key of camouflage technology, and we made this possible.
The total thickness of the flexible, multi-layered artificial skin is thinner than a human hair. The scientists envision that their research can be adapted for military uniforms to help soldiers blend into their surroundings. It can also be used for aesthetic purposes such as fashion, exterior of cars and buildings, as well as future display technology.
Visitors and staff of a French zoo have been amazed by the surprise birth of two African lion cubs. The babies, a boy and a girl, were born 2 weeks ago in Amnéville Zoo. Their birth was unexpected due to their father's advanced age of 17. The cubs will live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. According to zookeepers, they are currently in good health. The Amnéville Zoo has asked people on social media to name the newborns. The German capital, Berlin, turns colorful as the annual mural festival has brought artists together to display their works around the city. Artists have instilled new life into neighborhoods with giant murals that attracted hundreds of visitors. This year's event was resumed under the motto Home Street Home after its 2020 edition was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Organizers say the paintings invite people to discover the city as a gigantic open-air gallery.
The Italian city of Venice has held its annual historical regatta festival, attracting hundreds of spectators. People wearing costumes rowed their colorful boats and gondolas through the city's Grand Canal. The participants reenacted the city's history by carrying people dressed up as the King of Venice and his wife up the canal. Some of the riders also put their strength to the test by racing each other throughout the day. The regatta dates back to the 13th century and has been held every year in September.
An extraordinary concert has entertained hundreds of people in the German city of Dresden. Musicians performed underwater while five steamboats accompanied them with their whistles. The City Symphony Orchestra organized the event in an attempt to boost up people that is exhausted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Residents welcomed the program, describing it as a glimmer of hope. They believe that the unusual concert was good for heart and soul.
Young generations are becoming more concerned about our planet and seem determined to contribute to make it environmentally friendly. A great example is this Parisian boy who spends a lot of time fishing metals out of rivers and canals in the French capital. Good for him. 11-year-old Raphael uses magnets and grappling irons to fish metal objects out of the Seine River in Paris. Over the past 2 years, he has taken hundreds of bikes, scooters, and shopping trolleys out of the water. The boy says the practice was initially a hobby for him, but it eventually turned into a reasonability and a method to raise awareness about climate and environmental issues.
My goal is to raise awareness so that a maximum of people do something. They don't have to do what I do, but at least do something. Even if it's not necessarily cleaning up cannons, it could just be picking up a cigarette butt.
Raphael has also fished some very rare items out of different canals, including handguns, pieces of jewelry, and an artillery shell. An exhibition is therefore being held in Paris where Raphael's findings are going to be put on display. The young environmentalist has also been awarded the Medal of Paris, a prize belonging to the residents who accomplish a deed concerning the city.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Brazilian researchers have discovered a substance that could be used as a drug against COVID-19, and you may not like where they found it. A group of scientists have come across a potentially life-saving molecule in the venom of a kind of Brazilian pit viper. It is a peptide or a chain of amino acids that limited reproduction of the coronavirus in monkey cells by 75%. The peptide can be synthesized in the laboratory, so there is no need to capture more vipers. Now the researchers will evaluate whether the molecule can be used to create medicine for treating people with COVID-19. Thousands of cows have descended from their summer quarters in the Swiss Alps to enjoy the warm temperatures of lower heights. The cattle herds spent 7 weeks in the Alpine mountains, grazing at an altitude of nearly 2,000 meters. Their journey down started before sunrise and took almost 5 hours to complete. The cows, which couldn't make the trek due to injury, had already been carried down using trucks and helicopters. Farming has found an alternative look in the Netherlands, where cows produce milk on an eco-friendly floating farm. That may seem a surreal image of Rotterdam, the largest port in Europe. A herd of cows peacefully feed on board of what is known as the world's first floating farm. They live on the top floor of the three-story farm, while their milk is turned into dairy products on the other two floors. The floating farm opened in 2019. The owners say it aims to show the future of breeding and farming.
You must realize that the world is under pressure, therefore we have less and less land, agricultural land. Our idea is that in this way we can actually create agricultural land close to the city and also adaptable to the climate.
The floating farm is seen as a good alternative for normal farming in the Netherlands. That's a country with scarce land while being threatened by climate change. The farm's owners have also applied eco-friendly methods to make it durable and self-sufficient as much as possible. The methods include using solar panels and feeding the cows with grass from sports fields.
An Australian cyclist has become the first woman in history to pull off a front flip on a mountain bike. Caroline Buchanan landed the front flip at the OD9 cycling event in the German city of Birkenfeld. The maneuver won the former two-time Olympian the women's best trick title in the event. This was the first time the nines featured a female category. The annual event gathers the world's best slopestyle and freeride mountain cyclist to Germany. A spectacular light show has mesmerized people in a Greek capital, Athens. 200 colorful drones performed a short harmonized display illuminating the night sky. Their colors and shapes were changing alongside music tracks. The show, organized by the Athens Cultural Center, took place 120 meters above the National Opera and Library. An Afghan woman has received the gift of life at a most unlikely time while flying. 26-year-old Sama Nouri was on a plane bound for Birmingham when she started having contractions. She gave birth to a little girl in an altitude of 10,000 meters with the help of the cabin crew. Born in Kuwaiti airspace, the baby is named Hawa, which means Eve or Air in Dari. Both mother and daughter are completely healthy. The aircraft was carrying Afghan citizens evacuated from Kabul. The passengers left behind their old lives, but were gifted with a new one in the process. After all, life does find a way. A French graffiti artist has created a monumental mountaintop project to encourage a more contemplative approach to life, aiming at lifting people's spirits. The giant 1,500 square meter painting is called A New Lease of Life. It was painted on the summit of Mollison Peak in the western Swiss Alps. The 32-year-old artist says he was inspired by the likeness of childlike wonder. The mural depicts a little boy blowing bubbles in an area known for its clouds. The artist says he wanted to reflect the link between children and sky gazing.
I think we live in a world that includes anxiety, and we need a little lightness to balance it. So I believe that the clouds mean dreams and imagination. When we were kids, we liked to imagine shapes in the clouds and so on. And I believe that this is a moment where we have to breathe and also imagine the world of tomorrow with a certain lightness through daydreaming.
Saip also says he designs his creations to fit in with the environment using biodegradable paints made from natural pigments. The French artist is known for his massive graffiti works on grass that are best seen from the air. Some of his other works have adorned an impoverished shanty town in South Africa and the lawn in front of the UN headquarters in Geneva. One of Mexico's largest zoos has launched a one-of-a-kind exhibition, with the star of the show being a manatee couple. Visitors will be able to see the couple at the new exhibition, which is part of the largest aquarium in the country. The zoo received the manatee couple from the Caribbean with the intention of raising awareness for the protection of the species. Part of the ticket proceeds will go toward conservation efforts. Manatees are fully aquatic, mostly herbivorous marine mammals that are sometimes known as sea cows. These funny-looking creatures are endangered because of pollution and fishing techniques.
Paleontologists in Egypt have discovered fossilized bones of an ancient whale that could probably walk on land and swim in water. Scientists found the skull, jaw, and some ribs and identified the parts as the 43-million-year-old ancestor of the modern whale. It's also the earliest type of semi-aquatic whale found in Africa. The whale is estimated to have been 10 meters in length, weighing over half a ton, and was likely a top predator. Scientists say the four-legged whale is a key new species that helps trace the transition of whales from land to sea. Paleontologists believe that the ancestors of modern whales developed from deer-like mammals living on land over a 10-million-year period. The fossilized remains were discovered in Egypt's western desert, which was once covered by sea.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Previously, we started looking at corruption as it is the key to removing, demolishing, destroying, eliminating, choose the word that you like, of human rights, or when it comes to human rights. It is a key to me and you losing our basic rights through the form of corruption. Although corruption differs from country to country, it is possible, however, to identify some of the key common drive forces that generates it, right? So if we do a bit of comparison between countries, or if we do a collective process when it comes to information, we can see there are common grounds between countries when it comes to corruption. What is common to all countries, which are among the most corrupted, have been identified by Stevenson, which is a person who done a bit of work in that research. And he says all of them are developing countries. So all these common factors when it comes to corruption are in developing countries, or countries in transition, as he puts it, with rare exception, low-income countries. Most countries have a closed economy. The influence of religion is visible, where if you have a religious country, obviously the corruption becomes less. As he says, Protestant countries have far less level of corruption, low media freedom, and relatively low level of education. These are the keys or common grounds or common factors that generates corruption. So when you have, you know, when the economy is closed, for example, when there is no influence of religion present, because morality plays a massive role when it comes to corruption. When the religion is not visible in a community or in a country, the rate of corruption goes higher. When there's no media freedom, which means that I don't see who's, you know, who's stealing and who's doing all the corruption, then I can't do much about it. So if the state, if the government controls the media, obviously they're not going to put documentaries or interviews or on the news that this person in power, in parliament, in the Senate, wherever he might be, was corrupted. I don't see it because the media has low freedom. And when you have a country that is low in education, when the education is really bad, you're not going to give back to community educated people. And with low educated people, obviously, there is more corruption, because let's say most students don't get to make it to university. They will drop out. They become a dropouts, you know, in college, for example. And they tend to choose a quick way to make ends meet. They're not going to do something, you know, relatively high for society. They will just think of themselves. And even those who make it to university in the countries who are relatively low, when they have a low level of education, those who make it to power, they will abuse their power because they see themselves superior to the rest. So education plays a massive role. So regardless of the things that we have mentioned, corruption cannot be assessed unambiguously, since there is never only one phenomenon that is responsible for the occurrence and the development of such corruption. Corruption always arises from an area of several interrelated factors which can differ considerably from one to another. So we can't really say, well, that is the main cause for corruption, or that is the key for corruption. It comes from different areas. Among the most common, the ones that we mentioned, factors that influences the development of corruption, obviously, be it political, economical, and ethics, and education. So these are the ones that are mainly the driving force of corruption. And we will look at them one by one in episodes to come. Now, before we continue, let us take a break, and then we come back.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and you are still listening to the program For Humanity. Just before the break, we were looking at the fact that corruption differs from one place to another, and we mentioned some key points or common keys that generates corruption. Corruption will occur if the current gains is greater than the penalty multiplied by the likelihood of being caught or prosecuted. That's just a quote I brought from Wikipedia. Which means what? Which means that when you see that you got more to gain and the penalty to that is less, then I will indulge and you will indulge yourself in it, right? Which is quite selfish. So when we ask the question, what are the causes of corruption? Or where does corruption come from? There's a list of causes. Obviously, we can't, list all of them and say, well, this is the exact key. But it comes from, certain issues that arises within the person himself first and foremost. So if I need to indulge in, for example, corruption, let's assume bribery, it comes from within me, right? So among the list of causes of corruption, one, greed of money and desire. And obviously, that's the cause of all evil, right? When I have greed when it comes to money, and money is number one factor that drives people crazy. And even the Quran says, زين لهم حب الشهوات من المالي. Allah says, it was desired for them, money. And then Allah lists the rest. So when it comes to money, that's my weak point, or the weak point of every human being. So if I am not a moral person, if I am not a religious person, if I am not a person that has values and a moral code, I will, my desires will become the driving force for me to obtain wealth in an unholy way, right? So instead of me working, or even if I'm working, I would try to increase my wealth through trying to, take it from other people, either by bribes or force or what have you. So greed is number one drive when it comes to corruption. And desire, of course. When you want something, you desire something, sometimes you might not be greedy, but you say, you know what, I want that thing. And then you would seek it in any way possible because your desire drives you through it. So greed for money and desire are among the causes for corruption, which is something that me and you need to be very aware of when it comes to our personal life, when it comes to my inner self, because corruption originates from within before it takes effect on the outside. Now, I'll leave it up to here, and we will look at other causes in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
وعلى آل النبي أجمعين فبهم نرجوك أحسن ختمنا.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, wherein we discuss problems, issues, and relevant questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. All of the answers we stress are based upon the Holy Quran and the narrations of the Prophet and his household, peace be upon them all. Joining us in our studio is our guest speaker and expert, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi, who is a researcher at the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Our topic today is a continuation of the topic of the previous program, wherein we spoke about how to correctly fix the mistakes of our children. We spoke very briefly about this subject, but we did mention that when the child commits a mistake, it is very important to not blame the child and see him as the cause of the mistake, rather the result of some underlying issues And these underlying issues are the cause of this mistake, which we should concentrate on instead. To say it, please enlighten us further.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We were saying that sometimes the child himself is not at fault. It could be the educator himself. It could be the environment that he lives in. And sometimes it could be an external factor that is causing the child to do what he is doing or to make the mistakes that he's making. What's important is that we do not concentrate and put our emphasis on the child. Rather, we need to see what the problem is and what's causing it. So instead of pointing fingers at the child or trying to blame the child or trying to punish the child, let's find out what's the problem. So the child is not the problem. The mistake is the problem. That's our goal.
And that's a key difference. Yeah.
Yeah, so we make the mistake our problem and not the child himself. And sometimes we link the mistake to the child. For example, we say to him, "You're annoying." Right? So he becomes annoying. "You talk too much." Or for example, "You're dirty." And stuff like that. So we link the mistake to the child when he makes a mistake. For example, if he talks too much, we say to him, you're annoying. You talk too much. Well, find out why is the poor child talking too much.
If he even is talking too much.
Or for example, the child, you know, you have some children, even at the age of 7 or even more, sometimes they wet their beds. And the parents just bash them up. "Why did you wet your bed? You're too old." You know? Find out what the problem is. Why is a poor child wetting his bed?
It's not a voluntary action.
Yeah. Or the child, for example, spills water or something on a table or while they're eating a meal. Right. We always tell them all. Well, obviously there's a reason to why that happens. So instead of accusing the child of being stupid and being dirty and being this and being that, let's find out what the problem is and let's eliminate that cause. Right. So the child wouldn't have to be in this situation. Maybe sometimes he just requires a bit of attention, a bit of care. I don't know. Maybe a bit of work.
Like, you of know, course.
Just, instead of saying to him, "You're such a stupid boy. You're stupid. You can't get anything done." Well, maybe you should take the time to sit with him every day, spend like an hour with him, try to teach him his homework.
Right. Yeah.
You can't just throw him in his room and expect him to magically do his work and become a smart genius if there's no help.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Yeah. Makes no logical sense. And on that note, we will take a quick break.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
Dear listeners, welcome back to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing how to correctly fix the mistakes of our children. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
Therefore, we ask a question as parents. So this is all has to do, you know, when we try to fix the mistakes of the children, most of the times, if not all the times, it's got nothing to do with the child. It's got something to do with us. That's why most parents just keep complaining and they could never get it right.
Right.
We ask ourselves, and this is a very important question, have we taught the child not to make a mistake? Or we just wait for it to happen? Most of the times we never teach them what mistakes are and how not to make them, how to avoid them.